Hey, friend. Welcome to Houston Made, a show where I, Rusty Gates, get to talk with local Houston-based entrepreneurs and business owners about what it's like to be in the middle of that journey and selfishly gain insights as I build my own business. In this episode, I got to sit down with one of my favorite people, Tony Lerman, the chef and owner of El Topo, which is absolutely one of my favorite restaurants right here in Houston. This is actually the second half of our conversation. So if you didn't catch the last episode, I'd recommend that you go back and find episode 10, where Tony and I discuss the various influences that have shaped El Topo, starting a food truck after an unexpected job loss, and the beautiful world of food truck owners here in Houston. Really, it's a great episode, so go check it out. As I mentioned before, I couldn't pass up on the opportunity to record this in person at El Topo, so you'll definitely hear some of the restaurant sounds in the background. Now, listen in as Tony and I continue our conversation and discuss how his studies of literature and film have shaped his cooking, the guiding principles he follows in creating new dishes, and the necessary familial nature of the kitchen. Let's talk about cooking. Because obviously it was a passion of yours. It was a passion of yours personally, which led to your aunt saying, hey, you should start a food truck tomorrow. And then 6 weeks later, you had a food truck.
Yeah.
So that's amazing. It's clearly a passion, and it feels like you're making dishes for a different purpose. We talked about art earlier, and I've heard it said like that a definition of art is making something that leads people to feel something you felt. You create dishes, for an example, that I came here not too long ago, had the 5-course meal, and there was a sauce. I feel like it was like a salad. I was texting you while I was eating. I was like, this is amazing. And you're like, dude, I love that dish. Yeah, that sauce took a month to make. That's the kind of stuff. For people who don't know the place and they are just listening and you're making dishes like that, that a garnish for a dish took a month to make. What guides you in the dishes that you're making? What are you hoping that people encounter through food or your food?
Yeah. I think food is so interesting because everybody, I mean, it's one of the biggest shared languages. I mean, any human being on earth pretty much can go eat some food and feel a certain way about it. Let me back up and say that I think true success is really being able to walk up to anybody, hand them some food, and having them really enjoy it. I think that that is an unadulterated rating system, and I've strived over like my entire food career to make food for every different person indiscriminately, and hoping that it holds up. And so I think base level, I love cooking because you can talk to anybody in that language. I also love cooking because I really think it's one of the most useful skills that you can do. And it makes me so happy to be good at it. Like it's one of my biggest accomplishments is just being able to cook. And I absolutely love it. In terms of art and in terms of what I'm hoping to accomplish, I think it's several fold. First of all, my background, my undergrad is in English and communications. And in doing English, I did a ton of like literary criticism. And then in graduate school, I studied film and did a ton of film criticism. And I think when you do criticism of art in an academic way, it really teaches you to pull apart the building blocks of whatever that art is, identify them, and then mess with them. See what rules you can break, see what rules you shouldn't break, see how to make like a tongue-in-cheek comment, you know, like in whatever medium you're using. Yeah. And it's like the world is so beautiful because art's like that. Like you can make something, you can make a dish that makes people laugh, but is also delicious. You make a dish that like really sends somebody back to childhood for no reason. And they don't even expect it. You can make, you know, like you can make anything. And so I think that I really love that food. I really love food as a medium for art because it's so, it's just, you can see it, you can touch it, you can smell it. It activates so many senses. And so I think it's a very pungent medium. And then secondly, I also believe that the cultural history and just like crazy, like pop culture, like the way food, the way food dictates both class and taste and your like where you are in the world. And it, I don't know, it's so crazy that it's just such a rich place to mine. And when I figured it out, and I'm still figuring it out, when I figured out really how to cook in a way that delighted people and that was able in some small way to do the things that you described earlier, it was, you know, not only a gigantic feeling of accomplishment, but also like just this crazy opportunity. And so like, I would say that in terms of like breaking it all down, it's like food, the way I see it and the way I cook it in my restaurant, I do it for a number of reasons. Number one, I have to do it to make money. And so that means I'm very allergic to waste. And so I very quickly learned how to save everything that I could do. And we have a number of topo tenants. And one of them is state of stasis, which is just like our stupid way of saying, like, let's put something in a place where it just lasts forever. And you can do it. Like, I mean, it's crazy how much food can do that with like actually not a whole lot of like technological feats. And I mean, if you think about like duck confit can last for 6 months and like a walk-in even longer. And it's just duck and fat and salt and time.
There were millennia where people were storing meats and vegetables in the ground without walk-in freezers. Like this is dry freezing stuff. Like, now that's relatively new. People have been storing food for a long time. So you guys are finding creative ways to store and save waste.
And it's just, you know, you call it the larder system. Like the French larder system is one that like you prepare elements. Those elements last for a long time and usually get better with age. And then that's kind of how you make up your stock. And so then cooking just becomes a reaction to what you have in the larder and then what you want to put on the plate that goes well together. And so I think that's probably where I start first. Where I go from there is I say like, well, what is delicious? Like, what does it mean to be delicious? And I think that it's an ever-evolving concept, and I can't even begin to describe it, but I can say that that's where taste comes in. And taste both in like a palate form and in an artistic sense. Like there are tacky things that are done at restaurants everywhere, like very tacky. And I actually have to tamp down that reflex because it hinders me from enjoying other places because I get so offended by things. And I shouldn't be. It's just people doing honest work, but I'm like, oh, I would never. That crosses a number of lines that not very many people even know exist. Sure. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
It's sad.
I was just talking to somebody about this infographic that I saw that was talking about how whenever you pursue an art, two things are developing, which is your skill and your critical eye. And because those do not evolve or progress at the same process, you go through these waves of, I suck at this, because immediately your critical eye is better than your actual skill. And then your skill gets a lot better and your critical eye stays the same. You're like, I'm actually really good at this. And then it just, you go through these seasons of that, of going back and forth and oscillating. But by definition, when you pursue something and work at it and get better, your critical eye just naturally gets better. I make, I would say, silly internet videos. Like I make running videos with action cameras and whatever. And yet, just doing that and learning edits for my little Instagram videos, I'm constantly now just can't watch anything with me where I go, oh, that was an interesting shot. Or like, oh, that was a really weird transition. Like, just that. And again, I have to try to tone it down. This is not like a hobby that has slowly evolved into a small business. And I wouldn't like really classify myself as an expert at this, but I couldn't imagine you spend 6 years living, breathing, building something, sweating, and like bleeding all over it, and then going to somebody else and see them cutting corners and like doing that. You'd be like, this sucks. You're doing it wrong.
No, I did totally. And to your point too, I think, you know, not all of my lines are highfalutin, and I would say that very few actually are in the grand scheme of things. But what I discovered, at least in filmmaking, finding some common ground here, I read an editing book early on in grad school, and I think it was Edward Murch's. He's the guy that cut together Apocalypse Now and a number of other things. Yeah. And I think it's called On Editing Film. I'm not sure. It's incredible. You should get it. But what's interesting is that, so when you're doing film, you know, you're relying on the Kuleshov effect, right? Like having one image right next to another, and you're seeing your brain makes a story out of it, and you don't mean for that to happen, but our brains look for logic, and there we go. What they discovered, like, by making film after film after film after film, was that there's a set of rules that you kind of have to subscribe to, or else people don't know what the hell's going on in your movie. Like, for example, like, you can't, you know, like the 180 degree line, you have to obey that line. You can't cut across it. You have to have like at least a 20% jump in like size, or it looks weird. There's so many rules, dude, but it's really the same thing with food. It's like, oh, hey, I don't cook like eggplant with like vanilla pudding because it would be gross, you know? But there's a reason for it. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. Anyway, and maybe that's good. Maybe I should try that right now. But
maybe,
you know.
Well, and again, you're not going to know until you get into it. I also had an English major in undergrad, and I wonder if some of that is our common ground of just, again, learning.
You know it is, dude.
Yeah. English majors unite.
Yeah.
I think they're like learning to critically look at something and make connections where maybe connections were meant to be made.
That totally makes sense, though. I would say before I lose my train of thought,
yeah.
I ask myself if it's delicious, and then from there I ask what is my percentage chance of success with this dish. And that's probably the hardest question to answer, because
is that like a mass appeal thing? Like of how many people do I think will like this? Is that like the percentage?
That's always part of it. I would say that's more marketability, because I try to keep those two separate, and you'll see why. Because the thought I had early on in the food truck was like, you know, and I will probably never reach the level of Aaron Franklin and like his genius and what he's accomplished. But many times when I was on my food truck selling tacos to like 10 people in a line, I was like, this is sick. Like, we are cranking, but also it's a shit show in this food truck. And I could not in any way like hope to service like an Aaron Franklin's crowd. And that question has really like permeated everything that I do. And so I've tried to make a study of both like the kitchen, its flow, like the equipment that I have, how I'm holding food, how I'm prepping food, who's doing it, like who's on the line, how many people are on the line, what time of day. And so it's a constant like moving target of, this is my team, this is how many people I anticipate, and this is the menu that I think would be most successful. And so I tend towards being a little bit safe, but I would much rather be just a little bit safe and do a little bit less than have the entire like plate flop. And I think that's really more of a spiritual thing too, because I'm very like spiritually aligned with a lot of the elements of Japanese cooking, and they are very much in the moment, very Zen, concentrating their entire being on the piece of fish in front of them and saying to themselves, I am with full confidence going to cut a slice of this fish in the most perfect fashion that my hands are capable. And when you wake up and do a thing like that every day, the level of perfection that you're able to achieve is wild.
Yeah.
You know, David Chang, I was listening to one of his podcasts, and he was talking to Josh Skanes from Saison, who's a 3 Michelin star chef, very much Japanese inspired, towards that same end. And he was saying, like, okay, so what's really going to blow everybody's mind on this podcast is that, like, we as chefs, we have access to a level of ingredient that people don't. Like, yeah, you just can't get it. The example David Chang uses is Parmesan. Like, if you're watching Chef's Table and you watch that Massimo episode where he's like cracking open that Parmesan, you can't get that Parmesan. I can't get that Parmesan. Maybe a person in Houston could, but all that Parmesan is sold out before it's made. Like, that's what they don't tell you. But what's also crazy is, what they don't tell you is that you also don't have the palate to be able to even appreciate that Parmesan, because you can't tell the difference between a really nice Parmesan that's sold, like, say at like Central Market or something, and that Parmesan. Put in a blind tasting, you couldn't identify it probably. And so, like, we as chefs, like, that's what we're constantly wrestling with. And so I, you know, that month-long sauce that I served, it was a mignonette that I had made, and it was with peppers, and we had served it on top of that green bean. It was just crazy. That sauce, it did take a month for that flavor to penetrate, but like most of my cooks and me on like a bad day couldn't taste it if it's 2 weeks versus a month. You know what I mean? It just happened to me a month that day. And so it's constantly making that call in very little ways, both in the product that you procure for your restaurant and in the food that ends up on the plate. So like a barbacoa taco is just barbacoa, fresh tortilla, epazote aioli, pickled red onions, cilantro every time. That's it. And if you added anything to that, it wouldn't probably make it better. And I know that because I've tried to add a bunch of stuff. But if you removed one of those elements, it would be different. And so it's that I try to cook my base level of food where it's like, it's true, it's authentic, and it's as simple as it can be made. But also sometimes like pretty complicated.
Yeah.
You know,
but that's as simple as that complicated thing can be made.
Yeah.
That's amazing. I love all of it.
Yeah. Anyway, I figured you'd like that.
It's all, again, I think goes back to your intention and your thoughtfulness in what you're creating and what you're making. And I think that so many of the people that I have talked to, I mean, drastically different guests on this show, you know, Kathy Jones, who was our first guest, runs a college planning franchise, like, and she works with students, but that's like, she really wants to do that. And she's really thoughtful of what is she doing? What's the space that she creates and why? And I just think that thoughtfulness goes into it. I'm sure there are very successful people who are like, I don't know, man, I just do it. Like, it just works. I just make TikTok videos and it's cool. Like, that's great. But I think you do anything long enough and you get to start developing some of that. I'm interested to know, in the Houston restaurateur community, is that a particularly collaborative community? Is it a really competitive community? And do you get like heat from like classically trained chefs? Or is it a little bit of game recognized game? They're like, no, you're good.
Whoa. Okay. So I would say the new crop of Houston chefs, and some of the older like Houston chefs are very want to be collaborative by nature. They're being a chef is such an ego driven thing that just meaning that like there needs to be like a purity of vision, and to have collaborators in that, or to get your, or to shift your mind from something that's very, very much my thing that I want. And I know it has to be like this because this is what I know people want and I've got to cook it right now and I know where to get it. You know, that whole thing. And what it requires to be collaborative, which is something very different. Working together in a seamless and professional way is something that I think takes many years to cultivate. And I mean, like I'm constantly trying to cultivate that with my staff, but it only works because of, and I'm not trying to brag, but I have spent like the last, you know, 5-6 years of my life, ever since I started this food truck, trying to learn about myself and how good or bad I am and at what, and doing my best to take feedback. And I think, you know, recently during COVID, I broke down a ton of walls, and I think a lot of crazy shit happened that I didn't expect to happen. And I had to become protective over Topo for a number of reasons. And that really made me think differently about like ego and vision and collaboration and stuff. Because what I've found is collaboration is and should be a necessary part of any business. I mean, like, it's not me back there cooking tacos every single time, you know, and I can't. And the thing that I would build if it were just me would be very small. And probably not many people would know about it.
I know one of the things you said earlier is that like your the first operation of this thing is to make money, as much as it's love and passion and your vision.
Well, it has to. I mean, sadly, it has to. But I would also say that, you know, we're more constrained by people's different like value systems in the kitchen, and that's kind of the hardest thing is you. You know, it's like, imagine meeting like a new best friend. Like there's that time where you're like, oh shit, you think like that about something? Like
the moment
maybe it's something, just like completely innocuous. Like, oh my God, you let your kids watch that program and they're five. Like, or maybe it's like something crazy that happens like all the time in the kitchen. Like, really, bro, you're going to raw dog hand that burger meat right in front of me, right in front of chef. You're going to do that. And it's just like different standards. And so part of it comes from like policing standards. And I think that that hinders collaboration. I mean, any kind of cognitive dissonance, right? It's like, hey, man, you're not doing that the way I think it should be done. And I know you're doing a hard and good job at it, but it sucks and you need to throw it away. So I think that that is hard to navigate. And I think with other chefs in the Houston scene, they're all so dug in because Houston is such a big city that it's really people are able to have their little corners in this city, not talk to each other too much. I don't know. I would say those are the challenges and the bad things. I have worked with a ton of really great and amazing people, and that's honestly why I'm in this business is because like I have, you know, I'm doing a steak night at Johnny's on Monday. And I've known Benji Mason for almost as long as I've owned this food truck. My very first pop-up that I ever did was at his bar. And I did like a Mexican barbecue pop-up and it was insane. It was in the rain anyway, but there are a ton of people that I've worked with like that. But, I don't know, dude, it's ever evolving.
Sure.
And my hope is that this new generation is more collaborative and more helpful than the last generation. And at least in terms of the food trucking community, I can say that the people that I came up with, there were a number of very bad actors that set up huge entrance barriers into it. And, I have found very good people in that community and luckily they have become successful, and a lot of the bad actors, both in the restaurant community and the food truck community, have washed out. So that makes me hopeful. And I've always tried to like big up anybody that's starting a restaurant or starting a food truck. But man, so it's wild.
Yeah. Well, that's really cool. It's particularly interesting. You know, one of the last conversations I just had with Victoria Garcia, one of the things she and I talked a lot about, who you met, we did photography here.
Oh, yeah.
She and I were talking a lot about attracting your ideal client and, you know, setting a vision for your business, because why waste your time trying to work with people you just know you're not going to get along with. And that's one thing is on the client side. When it talks about collaborating and building a business like this where you have to have a team to share this vision, in such a hostile climate where people don't know how to disagree or agreeing to disagree seems like it's not even an option anymore. I think it's just really fascinating to talk about like committing to those relationships despite that moment of the like, oh,
yeah,
like, oh, I don't like that part of you, but if you can show up and you can do this and whatever, like, I don't have to love everything you do as a person, but you show up and you do your job and you're committed to this vision and can show up and be willing to learn to some degree. I don't know. I think that it's a compelling vision of community to say, yeah, we're going to work together. We're not always going to like one another, but we're committed to this thing and committed to both growing and learning, which I think probably is a prerequisite to say, because if you're not committed to learning and growing and to work towards the vision, you probably can't. You're probably not going to reach the vision.
Yeah. Totally true.
But I think it's really interesting. And it's something I'm wrestling a lot with, of just how do we live and work with people that we disagree with, or on some topics, like not even every topic, just some of them.
Dude, I would say on that too, you know, like the kitchen has long been, and I mean, like I've been to college, I've been to grad school, I've held a number of like pretty like, I guess like psychologically high up jobs where you're expected to solve any conflict with words, and where most of the people around you are not addicted to some sort of substance and or in some kind of like legal status that is super difficult to live in. And the kitchen is one of the worst, man. You know, there's so many of my employees that go through things that are just insane. The stories that they have, are actually, you know, a lot of them are very similar to mine. I struggled with addiction early on in my life and dropped out of college because of it. And who would have known that I would attract like almost a full staff of like former addicts that are all working together like super harmoniously and beautifully and unpacking each other's stuff. But also like a lot of these, like we forget how socialized problem solving and conflict resolution is. Like if you have ever dated outside of your like socioeconomic class and or like into a different culture, they solve problems differently. Sometimes better, sometimes worse. Like, but it's shocking. And it's also shocking the way some people choose to deal with problems in the kitchen. And I have both like had to bow up to cooks. I've never I won't back down from a confrontation, but at the same time, like I every single day pour into these people, because the more you pour into people, the fewer conversations like that you have. And like, usually, you know, Kayla and I were talking about this recently. And she goes, you know, Tony, because I was so upset. I had just had like, this was in the middle.
You know, 'cause she said your name.
Yeah. This was in the middle of the whole like IRS debacle where I was like, I, you know, didn't have money to make my business run, or I thought, and it was, you know, saved. But, in the middle of that, I was just so frustrated that at home we have a wrestling dummy, like a little jiu-jitsu dummy. And like at the end of the night, I was just so mad. I went and straddled it and was just throwing elbows in space and punching it, throwing knees at it. And Kiel goes, you know, aggression in animals is always either derived from fear or frustration. And in the mid, I wasn't ready to hear that. And I thought about it for a while. And it is 100% true. And then the other day, like I was, I've one of my employees is going through something that just like, just a life-changing event. That's just insane. So hard to sort through, so aggressive, or like so frustrating. And he's a naturally aggressive person, but had been particularly aggressive to me over a couple of days. And so I was able to sit down with him and relay that same thing. And rather than saying like, you know, why are you being so aggressive? You need to stop. You need to stop being frustrated with the situation. You know, all this stuff. I said, like, look, man, I have a very deep love and respect for all the things that you do. The quality of your work has been slipping lately. And I've noticed that like our relationship, because I consider this guy a friend, like, you know, and I, you know, like, what can I do? Like, can I help you? I see you hurting, dude. Like, I want to help. And that was able to squash anything that like any like hardcore aggression or like anyway, like our relationship turned around on the spot, smile on his face, and like the complete rest of the day was incredible. So I don't know, man, I'm learning every day. And I think that more than anything, when you go to build something that's bigger than yourself, bigger than you're capable of, I think the number one thing to do is to teach people. And if you are teaching people and just like, not even saying like, this is what we're about, we are about this here. It's like, oh, hey, you like cooking good food, right? Like most, like you are a professional cook. Let's chase after that together, and finding common ground, at least at the start. And then just watching where people go and like what they own. And now at this place, we have people owning every little corner of this business. Like Laura loves plants. And so she like helps us take care of plants and plants them. And we give her, you know, we're going to give her a plant budget to go out and buy plants. And, you know, like Vo loves flowers and we have to constantly have like fresh flowers on the table. And you know what I mean? It's on down the line, but every single person like has wants and needs and things that they love. And when somebody buys into your vision, and you're able to teach them at least your half-assed way of doing the thing that you're not super able to spend all your time doing and watch them grow that, it is absolutely crazy. And I think the last thing I would say on this note is for a while, when we started this restaurant, I had worked with a team to start this and to build this. And when we opened, I was, something did not feel right. Like it just, there was a gnawing in my stomach and the spirit of this place did not feel right. People, didn't feel great coming into work. And over like since September 2020, we have gone through a lot of staff changes. And right now the spirit of this place is palpably better. And of all the things I learned on the food truck, I didn't learn that. And I had to learn that in this space because like a physical space, a restaurant, really like attitudes and energy that you bring in here really matters. And when customers come in, they're going to catch it. I mean, it's just like furniture. And if you don't do that hard work, that soul work, it's not going to get any better. And right now, like I am in probably my favorite place with my favorite team. And it gives me so much strength just coming in here every day. So seriously.
That's awesome. It is palpable. And I feel like you're one of my favorite names to drop. It's like, yeah, no, I know Tony. I got a cell phone number. I can text him right now. He'll probably respond.
Dude, I would respond.
And it goes to your care for people, your care for me, and your care for your employees. And you can feel all that. I think it's a natural understanding that an organization is exactly that. It is people organized. And I don't mean organized in the sense of like tidy. I mean in the sense of like put in different places and put in their places where they are meant to grow and where they can grow and thrive. And I even talk about, as you talk about bringing people in here, it's not about this is how we do things, but rather it's this invitation of, hey, I'm building something and this is what it is. Do you see it? Can you catch a glimpse of it? And if you do, do you want to come? We can find a place for you and you'd make it better. And that gives people the ability to let go of ego or say, okay, well, I guess I won't do it my way as much as I want to and have that control. Like this thing is more captivating. It's the siren song, like, right? Like the idea of the sirens wrecking the ships. It wasn't stop listening. It's no, let's play a better song. Let's play a song that will pull you out of addiction or selfishness or anger and invite that. So man, this is such a special place on top, like beyond the food, which is in fact phenomenal. And it is. You've created something really special here and I am grateful to know you. I'm grateful to get to eat here from time to time. Anything that you want to share, announce, promote while you have this small audience?
Oh, dude. First of all, I'm super grateful to know you. You have breathed so much spirit and energy into my life and the lives of my family members. Like it's insane. I seriously count you above like so many people in terms of being a speaker of honesty and very deep truths that this world has to offer. So keep doing what you're doing. There's no way you're not going to be successful. Like you're too curious and you're too smart and funny to not be. And I would say that I will always take your text.
Thank you very much.
Seriously. You're on a short list of people. Sorry for those that I don't text back, by the way. I'm really sorry.
Yeah.
But you know, Topo is doing dinner Fridays and Saturdays nights. It's a rotating seasonal menu and we're about to drop the new menu soon. for summer. And then we do brunch on the weekends, so Saturday, Sunday. And that's a different menu. And then we have a fast casual menu that's always available. That's where you find like tacos and burgers and stuff. And I guess for the people that have never been here, I would just invite you to kind of try your way through that fast casual menu. It's, you know, if I can tempt you, the only time I put something on that menu is after I've heavily, heavily workshopped it and have been like really tossing around for years sometimes. The Houston Taco, the Barbacoa Taco, not only has it won multiple awards, but it's also been like workshopped to death and it's still being workshopped. Like we just, I don't know if you knew this, but we're actually nixtamalizing all of our corn in-house now. So we're getting heirloom corn from small farms in Mexico. We're cooking it with culinary lime here, and then we're rinsing it and grinding it in our own mill for like the absolute freshest tortillas. And it's just wild. So we're always trying to break out stuff like that. And the way I relate it, you know, you said something before we started this podcast about like getting that next piece of equipment. That's what it's about. It's that hustle. It's very much like rock climbing or jujitsu.
Yeah, here we go.
In that like you get your, so what they say in jujitsu is GPS, grip, position, submission. The submission never comes without first getting a grip and a position. And when you're in a business, you can only ever just kind of like hang out and suck air for a little bit until you can find either that next handhold or that next grip or whatever. Yeah. And that, you know, that corn mill was one of them. The food truck was my first, you know,
it's just, sure.
And so it's just one little step at a time.
Dude, that's awesome. Well, we will absolutely push people here. I can personally endorse the Barbacoa Taco. It is so great. Yeah. Well, man, I love you. Thank you so, so much. And we'll have to have you on again.
Dude, love you too. Thank you.
A huge thank you to Tony and to you for listening to this episode of Houston Made. As I recorded and produced this episode, I was continually struck by how fortunate I am to get to host this show. The fact that you have taken a good bit of your day to listen into these conversations means the world to me. So really, thank you. If you haven't already, be sure to follow Tony on Instagram at eltopohtx, where you can get a glimpse of the beautiful dishes they serve, and then make time to get out there and try all of his amazing food. I just had the Smash E Burger, which just hits different, and I'm already planning a trip to enjoy the 3-course summer menu that just dropped. If you'd like to connect with me or any of our other guests, you can find me on Instagram at Rusty J Gates or reach out directly to the show at Houston Made Podcast. As with all kinds of small businesses, every bit of support goes a long way. So take a moment to rate, review, and share Houston Made with the one person you know who might be interested. Houston Made is hosted by me, Rusty Gates, produced and edited in collaboration with Luke Bronner. Our artwork was designed by Stephanie Leal and Sarah Alwegfi in collaboration with Mac Ryan Creative. Credit for our theme music goes to Old Friends, New Friends. Houston Made is glad to be a part of the Milieu Media neighborhood of podcasts and storytellers. We are people who care deeply about human connection, and in our neighborhood, we find that connection by hearing and appreciating one another's stories and by sharing our own. To find more shows made by amazing storytellers from all kinds of backgrounds, visit MilieuMedia.com.